Welcome to Parenting Special Needs Live. I'm Shantae. And have you ever wished for a break? I know I certainly have. In fact, I saw on Facebook post that came across my desk where someone had handwritten a note and took a picture of it that said Christmas list. And they wrote one parentheses blanken break. Now they used the actual word. But I thought, as I looked at it, I kind of giggled to myself, but I thought, boy, isn't that the truth? I could certainly use one. And, but I thought, you know, how do we do it? How do we add it to our, you know, put it into our life? So I reached out to Dr. Mintz, and she is a chief clinical officer of Action Behavior Center, serving children and families across Texas, Arizona, and Colorado. Her specialty is in autism therapy and support. And I asked her to kind of help us. How do we, you know, share like how we can include breaks? So today we are pleased to welcome Dr. Mintz to discuss these breaks, timeouts, respites, whatever you want to call them, and how we can actually incorporate them into our life. So please help me welcome Dr. Mintz. Welcome. Woo! How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you so much for having me. This is such an important topic for our families.
It really is. I mean, I know we talk about it all the time, but you know, how do parents, you know, actually incorporate it when they're, you know, with their challenging life?
Yeah, I like to think about this on a slightly broader spectrum along the lines of self-care. So being able to take breaks is one part of self-care rituals that I think all humans need. But when you are responsible for the care of a child or children with a disability, sometimes a break feels almost impossible because that means trusting others, finding others that you feel safe with. So I've come up with a few ways in which I think parents can engage in self-care that may or may not lead to breaks, but hopefully help them feel a little bit better. So can I share one of those with you right
sure,
now?
Sure, please.
One of the first things that I teach the families that I support is to think about how you talk to yourself. I mean, and this really is for anybody, but particularly families who are responsible for children with disabilities, there tends to be a lot of all the things we've done wrong in the day. You did that wrong. You're not good enough. You didn't provide enough support for your child here. You didn't speak to that person. You lost your temper. And I sort of use that age old mantra that you should be speaking to yourself the way you would speak to a best friend in need. So if you're a parent and you're having a really bad day and you find yourself engaging in all of that things you didn't do good enough about yourself, we counsel our families to reframe, take a breath, think of yourself as a friend in need, and start engaging in that positive self-talk. We also find daily affirmations really helpful. And I know it might seem silly or corny, but most of our families get those calendars that are like one affirmation for a day. There are apps you can get online, but starting your day and ending your day with a positive statement that you can just put on repeat when you want to say all the negative things to yourself is a really easy, simple way to start engaging in self-care.
Yeah, no, I think those are awesome. And actually someone had given one to my daughter and I loved it. So I'm thinking, but I didn't really think about it for myself. You know, I think we put ourselves last so much. So
always,
what do you think about the impact of, you know, raising a child with special needs has? I mean, I know that there's many, right? I mean, emotional, physical, mental, you know, challenges, like any other advice you can recommend? Because it is, everyone is different and it's hard. Like, you know, this is perfect for me right now, because actually, if you knew what was going on in my life, this is perfect. And if I cry, forgive me guys, because life is a little rough right now. But how, you know, there is a lot to it. And I'll just be, since I already said all that, I'm in a situation now where it's like, okay, my help that I did have or the support is kind of, maybe I don't have it any longer. And I'm feeling very overwhelmed. So like to the point that I can feel the tears like right there. So forgive me, but it is real life. And I'm like, 'cause you just need
Yeah. Losing.
So I'm there. I need help. What do I do?
So like losing help, right? So if you've gone out and found somebody that can help support your family, and then you lose that help, that's equally devastating, right? To not having help at all. I think a really important message is don't be afraid to ask for help from all of the folks that are in your life, right? So I think we feel bad. I don't want to ask for help. They also have a lot on their plate, but we're a village. And you have to look at your team in that way. And, you know, I encourage families to ask, and the worst possible thing is that person can say no, and you're no better off than where you were before. But asking for that help and feeling no shame in being able to ask for that. In addition, sometimes families are apprehensive about leaving their children with somebody that's not them. So an alternative way of looking at that is finding other families that have similar needs and creating social time together. So there's a little bit of a break that can be provided if you and two other moms get together and go to the park. There's sort of shared responsibility in supporting children at that time. You get to be around folks that can give you those positive affirmations you can relate to, but also it's shared responsibility and not all on your shoulders in terms of watching them, making sure they're safe, making sure others are treating them well and fairly. And then finally, you know, respite. There are usually, depending on what state and city and jurisdiction you're in, respite services are often available by the state. And I know there's probably folks right now that are like, yeah, but I've had those folks and they're not great and I'm scared to leave my child with them. I would encourage you to keep trying. Those funds and those services are there for a reason, and respite workers have training and things like CPR in first aid. So it's a little bit more soothing to leave your child, even for brief periods of time, with somebody that has more training than the average mom's helper or babysitter.
And I really appreciate that, because I, as long as I've been, you know, I mean, my daughter's 24, I never knew that service existed. So I was so thankful when I know you shared it in your article, and I'll put the link below, but wow. Now I do have a question. I haven't had a chance to fully look into that site, but is it more, I just want to make sure, because I'm sure maybe other people are asking this too. Is it more for real problem behavior issues, or is it just kind of like, you know, I mean, is it that, or is it just kind of, you need a break, or are they both?
It can be both. So just speaking from the states that I have worked in, there's usually a spectrum of the type of supports that you can get, and they try to match the training in the background with the family's needs. So, you know, if it's a child that does not engage in severe and challenging behavior like aggression or self-injury, but a child that maybe doesn't have communication, so there needs to be somebody there to make sure their needs are met, or a child that needs assistance with toileting, they would pair you with a respite worker that has those skills. I would be, obviously, the more significant the needs of the child, the more scrutiny I would encourage families to have when selecting those providers. If you also receive speech and language services, occupational therapy, or applied behavior analysis, many times these state or local funding sources will allow training to happen for that respite worker from some of your other providers. So asking a ton of questions and trying to get those respite supports as much help and training as possible.
As needed. So yeah. Is that something that as a parent, I can just reach out to that? I think it was, we have the link, I'll have to get it, but is that something we can reach out on our own, or do we have to be referred by someone to go there, or how does that work?
It depends on how funding services work through your state. It also depends on what your private, if you have insurance, what insurance covers, what Medicaid covers. So every state is different. But I think that it's archwestrespite.org is the link. I would start there, because they have information about every single state and available respite workers. And those organizations should be able to help advocate and support in what the steps are in that state. Also, if you have a physician, a pediatrician, if there's a psychologist involved, if there's a board certified behavior analyst. Those team members might also know information, or a teacher in the school, a psychologist in the school should have those resources or know how to find them locally.
Wow. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you so much. Because yeah. I think, and has that been around for a long time? I mean, you might not, it has been.
I mean, I've been doing this work since 1996, and to my knowledge, in every, I think I've worked in about 10 states in the US, and every state has some method or some process by which supports can be provided. Again, sometimes the folks that come to serve you are not right for your family. And that's where, as a parent, you got to keep pushing through until you find the right supports, or you advocate to get the right training for those supports so you can actually breathe. I'll add, some of the families I've worked with, while they're uncomfortable leaving their child with a respite worker and leaving the home, respite workers can also come to your home and you can stay home. So you might then be able to take a shower, or, and I know for some folks, they're like, oh gosh, I haven't had one in 2 weeks. I believe you have not had a shower in 2 weeks. Just having someone else in the home that can come grab you if they need you, but that you feel okay to close that door and have 20 minutes to yourself, that can be invaluable. So it doesn't need to be fully separated from your child. It might just be added supports in the home.
No, and I appreciate you saying that, because I think that's an excellent point too. Sometimes it is just being able to close the door and even watch a TV show uninterrupted so that you just kind of get to relax and think of something else might be helpful. So I'm thinking in my own life that would be helpful.
No, I actually have worked with a family where the respite worker would come for 1 hour a week, and that was her time to watch whatever Real Housewives of that season was on. And for her, it was just such a departure from the life that she was living. And it's exactly what she needed to fill back up her bucket, feel human, and be able to go back and pour into her, or, you know, into her child. It looks different. It looks different for everyone. And being really creative with those supports, it never hurts to ask.
Well, I think that's another important point that you're mentioning, is like, it is different for everybody. And it could be as little as that, you know, I mean, or maybe that's not little, but, you know, it could be something like that, whatever's going to work to kind of just kind of, you know, a break, you know, or I'm calling it a break, but even if it's just a little me time, but just something so that it's kind of, and it might not be like a whole weekend. You might not be able to do that, but it could be an hour where that hour, at least, you know, like you said, could fill you up. So are there any, like, with other families that you've worked with over the years, like, are there the best, you know, I mean, can you share the best tips you've, you know, or things that you've really learned from them that really work, like similar to like what you just shared?
Yeah, I think our schedules are our best friends. And, you know, I learned this when I was battling to make time for exercise in my life, you know, just the things that we take for granted. But I was spending time supporting, you know, hundreds of families and not really taking care of myself. And a really smart person said to me, do you put it on your calendar? Because you never, ever don't do the things that are on your calendar. And I would then started to talk to some of my families about, how do you schedule your self-care? When does that happen? And the answer is, it never happens, because it never even makes it to the calendar. So some of my families have had, especially if your life is governed by that calendar, even if it's 5 minutes of meditation, right? Like getting headspace and having that app, if it's on the calendar, that's your way of committing to it happening. And if that means you need to rely on your partner, on your mom or your dad or the neighbor down the street, that you are taking those 5 minutes and you are not giving up on those, that those belong on your calendar. That has worked really well for some of my families that are overachievers and never ever make that time for themselves.
No, I think that's, you know, great too. Control your calendar and control your life, like, in a sense. You know, I know that has been, I've been working on that in a different manner, but, and you're right, like, there's no me time on that calendar. It's all of the other things that have to be done and all of my other obligations. So you're speaking to me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
we forget how important that me time is. I think we think it's selfish, right? That if we are doing something for ourselves, that somehow we're behaving in a selfish way. Everyone talks about the oxygen mask. I like, to think about it as a bucket, and you can't pour from an empty bucket. There's huge responsibility in taking care of children. And there's added responsibility when those children grow and continue to not be able to care for themselves. We have to be okay in order to be able to care for others. And that's okay. Like, that's a fact. So allowing ourselves to not see that behavior as selfish, but instead as what we need to do to continue to be able to support our families.
No, I think you're so right on. And I hope that people listening, I'm going to make sure I start scheduling it in my me time. Right. I'm going to even look at some of those. The article is in our current issue, the November, December issue, and your article. And some of the things that you recommended were, you know, even the therapy online. I wasn't aware of that you could call, like, when you.
Yeah.
Like, wow, I never thought about that. But I'm actually, like, you know, and so I learned quite a bit on those apps and different organizations and things that you shared. So you guys check out her article, November issue. And is there anything else that I really appreciate you coming today and sharing? Is there anything else that I didn't, you know, ask you or mention that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, I think I'd love to give everyone just an exercise with the holidays coming and a new year starting. I've had some success both in my own life and then in the families' lives that I support. We call it gratitude journaling, but it can take on a ton of different forms. I encourage families, just let's say starting January 1 all the way through to the holidays at the end of the year, that no matter how rough the day was, and I know that there are some of those days that it's hard to just pick yourself up, to write down one thing that happened that day that was good. Even if it is, I got out of my pajamas, I put on my clothes, I fed my child breakfast. And then at the end of the year, we spend some time going through that and, you know, really remembering all of the positives that had happened through the year. I think as humans, we're much more likely to focus on the stuff that's not going well. And we need really concrete reminders of all the amazing things we do every single day. And for me, it's sort of a beautiful journey throughout the year. I've repeated this exercise for the last 5 years. And I hope that it will bring some of the folks listening some joy as they work through that project.
Oh, I love that. That's a great idea. I'm gonna do that one too. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
I steal all these ideas and put them. Well, I'm going to incorporate them in my life because I do have the gratitude journal laying next to my bed, but I don't write in it. But I think maybe because I think I have to write a lot. But if I just did one thing, I could probably, you know, I could probably sketch that out really quick and just be grateful. I mean, and I do try to do my gratefuls, but you know, still, you know, just like the me time, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't actually happen, but I think that what you just suggested could be done. So thank you. So I want to thank you very much for sharing with us today. This has been really helpful for me. I hope that it's helpful for those listening and watching us. And, you know, thank you so much. And thank you everybody for being with us today. And in case no one has told you, I'm saying this to the audience, you know, and to you too, you know, you are doing a great job, you know, be good to you. And we'll talk to you next time. And thank you so much, Dr. Mintz, for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.